Good morning, everybody. Happy that you're joining us. Lou, are you there?
I am there. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. So we had now started on chapter 7, and we had come to the part where we're talking about Brahman and how Brahman actually manifests himself, itself. We are talking about verses 14 through 19 of chapter 7 in this episode, which is episode 82. And what we did the last few verses was to explain that Brahman is like electricity. Just to go over very briefly, just to remind you, is like electricity, except that we're talking about Brahman as consciousness, as life, as awareness, as everything. And that Brahman presents himself, I'm just going to refer to Brahman as himself, right, although it's not a male or female or it's consciousness. Brahman presents himself in various forms as matter alone. And we talked about how Brahman chooses those different materials to make that matter from the subtle forms of space, air, fire, earth, water, etc. And then Brahman himself gives life to that matter. And the two in Sanskrit were known, if you remember, as apara, apara with the A at the front, apara prakriti and para prakriti. And para prakriti refers to the life force or the consciousness that Brahman gives it. And apara prakriti refers to the material. And that the material could be a body of an elephant or that of a mosquito or that of a human being. That's the apara prakriti. And when consciousness enters into it, then there's life that forms. So we are now going to talk about 14 through 19. And the reason I picked so many different verses at the same time is because essentially they're saying virtually the same thing. That in order to get over this delusion of the world, what you need to do. So in here, what we need to recognize is that God alone exists. We don't recognize that everything, the trees behind me, me, everything in this world is God, Brahman. It is, you may be seeing the dead form, which is just a material as a log of wood, and that's the apara prakriti. Or you may be seeing the apara prakriti as me, as well as the para prakriti, which is life in me, being able to talk and move and so on. But if I were to have a heart attack and drop dead right now, the para prakriti would disappear. It just moves. It doesn't move at all. The body drops. The Brahman is everywhere. So it just stays exactly where it is. It doesn't leave the body like a soul and move away. It just stays exactly where it is. The body drops. And then all you see of my dead body is the apara prakriti. So God alone exists. He alone expresses as this whole world and various being in his twofold prakriti, apara prakriti and prakriti. And it has apara prakriti takes many forms which are constantly changing, and the para prakriti illumines it with the consciousness of life. So an example that is given in the scriptures a lot is that of the sun. The sun is so radiant, and you various rays of the sun come down, and when it hits a stone wall, it reflects. You can see the sun reflecting off of a stone wall, right, and it's like a dull reflection. But if it hits a lake of water, very clear water still, you can actually look as if to see the sun. And these are all reflections of the sun in a rock or stone or water. But the clearest reflection is in clear, still water. So right, similarly, you could see the reflection of God, Brahman, and his awareness when you see it in a mosquito or a log of wood or a tree. But you can see it in its clearest manifestations in human beings, because we can talk, we can express ourselves, we can move, all kinds of things. So let's go to verse 14. Verse 14 is this divine illusion of mine made of gunas, which are qualities, is difficult to cross over. Those who seek me alone cross over this illusion. So he's saying the same thing, that if you focus with your gunas, the gunas make up these prakritis, the apara prakritis, the human body, is made up of the gunas. Myself, made up of sattva guna, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And same thing with everything. There's a mixture of all these gunas which Brahman presents, which make the material, and into that comes the consciousness. And that is difficult to cross over this illusion. He calls it this divine illusion. Why divine? Because it is made up of the divinity of Brahman. And mm-hmm. so it's divine. And it's an illusion. So we see, when you look at me, you see a human being, you see a man, you see my eyes, my hair, you look at this, and you say, okay, this is him. But really, what I am is totally Brahman. But you don't see the Brahman, you only see me. It's similar to that age-old analogy in the scriptures of the rope and the snake.
Yeah.
A rope that you see in the dark as you're walking, you say, oh, there's a snake across the path. And you see him, that thing, as a snake. In fact, you imagine the hood of the cobra or the writhing of the snake, and you're so sure, you're convinced it's a snake until somebody turns the light on and you say, no, it's a rope. Similarly, you're looking at me and you're seeing a person, but really, in fact, it's an illusion. What I am is Brahman.
Right.
So Brahman produces me. And I am made up of gunas. Because of the gunas and qualities is my body. And it's difficult to cross over this illusion. Only those who really seek Brahman can get past this illusion of everything around us being sattva, rajas, and tamas, and look past that to get to Brahman. Verse 15 says, the evildoers, the deluded, the lowest of men, such strong words, do not seek me. They whose wisdom is destroyed by illusion follow the way of the demons. So as I've said before, the Gita, the scriptures, the Vedas, the Upanishads are very sparse in their words. Every word is carefully selected. So for him to choose such strong words, evildoers, deluded, lowest of men, they follow the way of the demons. Basically, what he's saying is that the mental agitation that somebody goes through when their desires are not met, they become like demons. Now, the sin or papam in Sanskrit is the state of mental agitation that occurs when whatever you think of, whatever you do, bounces back to you. That's
right.
Sin. So you do something bad, you think about it, you say, oh my God, I did something. That constant thought of I did something bad, that haunts you through your conscience. That is called sin when it affects you. Demons are not a subset of human beings. You know, we think of demons as objects with different forms, and they're bad, and they're ordinary humans, according to the Gita and the scriptures, who do not follow the path of self-development. They're extremely selfish. All they look at is what they want themselves. And so in their selfish and means, they do things that are considered evil by others. So why do they not follow the path of development, self-development? Why do we all not do it? Why does everybody not listen to these lectures and get to be a better person? Because it's easier to follow the path of immediate self-gratification by you, because of your desires.
Right.
So we each have our vacuum inside because we don't know the self. We don't know our Atman or Brahman. Because we don't know it, we want to get to the point where we have seek happiness, and we think that happiness lies without, outside. And we think that by going and seeking whatever it is that our thoughts run to, because our thoughts run all the time, I wish I had more beauty, I wish I was more beautiful, I wish I had longer hair, I wish I had more money, I wish I had this food, I wish I had more power, fame, all kinds of things that you all know about. So those thoughts become desires. And when those desires are fulfilled, you get instant gratification, instant pleasure, especially for the five senses. When you fulfill them, you get instant gratification. And that desires, those desires destroy you. Because either way, when they're fulfilled, you get a momentary, a small period of satisfaction, but immediately it goes on to something else. You either want the same desire again and more of it in a higher form, or you want a different desire. And the desire for more grows and grows. And then also those desires take other forms, as we mentioned. These are called the base emotions. The base emotions are jealousy, anger, arrogance, greed. And how does that come about? You have a desire for something, somebody else comes and blocks you from getting it, mm-hmm. then you get angry. Remember this. This is very fundamental and basic, that you have a desire for something and somebody else comes and takes it before you can get it or prevents you from getting it, you get angry at the person, at the circumstances, at whatever. Somebody has more than you, you become jealous. That desire of wanting it, but somebody else has more of it than you, you become jealous. Somebody has less than you, your desire for whatever it is, somebody else has it, but less, you become arrogant. Another very base emotion. Your desire gets fulfilled, it grows in strength, it becomes greed. You want more and more of it. So all of these are base emotions. And what in this verse he says, those people who do not surrender to me, they follow the way of the demons. So the mudha, which means really stupid, who doesn't know what's good for him and what's not good for him, they follow the path of bondage, sorrow, and pain because they're bound to their desires, they're bound to this world, they're bound to this world of illusions. Verse 16, four kinds of virtuous people worship me, the distressed, the seeker of knowledge, the seeker of wealth, and the wise or the jnani. So who goes after God? You may think that, you know, the only person that go after God are the spiritual ones who dress in, you know, white clothes or orange clothes or saffron colored clothes and go to temples. But that's not true. So he says here, the one who approaches me, the distressed, which in Sanskrit is artaha, those are the people who worry and who are anxious and they're stressed out and strained, they're agitated, and they seek God to relieve these emotions. The attention is on God. Say, God, please let my daughter get married. She's getting older. I want her to get married before. Da, da, da. I want a grandchild. I'm not having a grandchild. Please, God, please, God. So their attention of the artaha is on God. But right. Really, the end result is, what's in it for me? Can I get my daughter married? Can I get a grandchild? Can I get this job? Can I get this promotion? It's all because of that. The distress, worry, anxiety, stress, and strain. The next one is the seeker of knowledge. Such a person is just curious. He's just curious and has an inquiry into what is all this? What is Christianity all about? What is Judaism all about? What is this Gita all about? He's curious and he's inquiring. He wants to know about the transcendental being, God. He gets intellectual knowledge, not self-devotion. He's not devoted to improving himself. He's not spiritual. There's no evolution there. Does no karma. Does nothing good for others, just wanting to get more knowledge. Now, the third one is the seeker of wealth, which is artharthi. Artharthi is the one who seeks money from God. Now, God, please let me get this raise. I want money. Let me get this lottery. I wish I could get this job, whatever. Money buys all kinds of things only for the five senses, right? Color and form for the eyes, things that you can smell, things that you can hear, things that you can taste, things that you can touch, or all five together. Mm-hmm. Money buys that. Money does not buy love. Isn't there a Beatles song about that, Lou?
You can't buy me love, yeah.
Yeah. Money can't buy knowledge. It can't provide anything in the intellect. It's pure sensual enjoyment. So an artharthi, it goes to the temple, may appear to be religious and says, God, please, please, please. But again, it's for himself. It's for money, for himself, for his sense organs. And the last one, which is the jnani, the wise, wants to reach God purely for the sake of self-development, self-realization. His thirst to know God, he's thirsty to know God, but he's not yet become self-realized. So these four are important because Krishna, Lord Krishna, talks about this again and again in the next few verses because he talks about the jnani versus the others. Now, you may say, well, you approach God because you're an artharthi, because you think that you want wealth. So you go to the temple and you pray and you say, please, God, let me. Or you're a artaha, where you're going because you're distressed. Or you're a jignyasu, because you're going there for knowledge. what the scriptures say is that even though you do that, you're still a pursuer of God, you're still a follower of God, and ultimately, even if you do that, ultimately you will get to the right path by following that. So that's important. Verse 17, of these four, the jnani, the wise, ever steadfast with single-pointed devotion, excels. For I am extremely dear to the jnani, and the jnani is dear to me. Now, this produces some confusion in some people because the jnani has two qualities which are underlined above, which are ever steadfast and single-pointed devotion, which right. means that he's constantly locked into the focus of God, not because he wants money or power or fame or what the other three want, but because he just wants God to be his, to be realized. When he's awake, when he's dreaming, when he's sleeping, always the thought is just on how can I realize God. The Upanishads say that a person loves only when the person or thing that he's loving is related to oneself. My son, my daughter, etc. So you love that because it's my, it's related to myself. So a jnani has a passion for material objects and matters of the world which are disappeared. And those have shifted towards the self. All he thinks about is himself.
Right.
Now, the disagreement comes about, the confusion comes about because he says, I am extremely dear to the jnani and the jnani is dear to me. So people have said, does that mean that that Brahman has partiality? Is he closer to one than the other? Does he like this person better than the other? Bhagwan or Brahman has no partiality, no emotions. I like this one better. This one right. is closer to me. What this verse means is that as you progress along that line, as you become focused on God, you are going to be very close to self-realization. So that means you're very close to getting Brahman. Brahman is very close to you, not because he likes you more or you like him more, but because of your right. efforts, you've gotten to be close to him. Verse 18, noble indeed are all these, but the jnani I deem as verily myself. For steadfast in mind, he is established in me alone as the supreme goal. So it's similar to a person, you know, who is away from the loved one and writes a letter saying, I'm coming home. And the person can't wait to see that person. You know, as the person comes closer, he says, I'm in the plane, I'm calling from the airport, I'm about to board the plane, and they're telling me to shut my cell phone off. Then he's in the plane, then he lands at the airport. He says, I'm landed right in the city near you. I'm getting into an Uber, I'm coming close to you. Then he's in the Uber. Then he comes and you're in your house looking out. You see him at the street getting out of the Uber. Then right. he comes and you give him a big hug. All of these have names in Sanskrit. But essentially, what this is saying is that somebody who's a jnani, I deem as verily myself. He is me. For because he's focused on me, coming to me, he's established in me alone as as his supreme goal. Same thing, the analogy with the sun and the water. The one that is closest and appears closest to the sun is the one that has the clearest reflection in the water.
Right.
Verse 19. At the end of many births, the man of wisdom reaches me, realizing that all is Vasudeva, which is reality. Such a great soul is difficult to find. So only a jnani ultimately surrenders to me after many, many, many lifetimes of being a devotee. So it could be that this is the lifetime. Everybody thinks, oh, he says that. That means I've got many right. lifetimes to go. Yeah. But it could be that this is the one where if you do the right things, you do your karma yoga, you do your jnana yoga, you do your bhakti yoga, and maybe at the end of this, you will reach nirvana and be close to God. A maha atma is one who realizes that each atma is maha. Maha means great, and atma is atman, the great atman, that every one of us who realizes that all the atmans are the same. These are all maha atmas. So why do we not surrender to God? We talked about this before. and we'll continue with that in verse 20. And it's such an important verse that I'm going to devote the entire time just to that one verse. Today we did from 14 to 19, but next time we'll do 20 alone.
Excellent.
So I think, how long has it been, Lou? 20 minutes?
Just 20 minutes. Yeah, we're in a good tight episode. If you want to contact us, the Facebook page, Gita Memoirs of a Psychiatrist, look in the upper right corner of the screen. You can find us there and talk to us. If you just want audio-only versions of these to take along with you in your commute, say, you can go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, almost everywhere you get your podcasts. And we'll see you in the next episode. Right, Doctor?
Thank you so much. Thanks, Lou. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.